This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the weekly show where myself, my name's Dan, and this gentleman, his name is Dan. We talk about things like sci-fi, fantasy, movies, television, books, dogs, dragons, horses, space lasers. You get the idea. And of course, today is a very special day because, as I think you all know, hey, Martha, good to see you. In only a few days, the second season of House of the Dragon, HBO's Game of Thrones prequel show, debuts on HBO and Max. And Daniel and I have both seen the premiere episode. Some critics have seen first four. We've seen the first one. And we are here to give you our spoiler-free, no spoilers necessary, impressions. Daniel, do you have any tantalizing teases to hand out ahead of our discussion? Also,
oh God, tantalizing teases. Well, just that everybody in the chat, we're about to go back to Westeros. It is about that time, and that is damn exciting. Yeah. Hi, Martha. Hi, Julie. Hi, Bubo Bubo. Hello from Kiev. Hello from not Kiev, back to you. It's exciting times in Westeros right now. We have a lot of stuff to discuss. We're going to be very careful about how we discuss it because obviously this show's not out yet. Comes out Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, I think, on Max and HBO. And yeah, we're finally back. There will be fire. There will be blood. There will be dragons. That's what I'll say. How's that for a tease? Is that cryptic and nondescript enough?
There's no way HBO can come to your house and obliterate you in the night for that. Okay.
The teases are just house words from different houses. No one knows.
We have some good questions from the audience. So that could be a good place to start. I'll go with one that's easy to watch. Oppo, we watched the first episode. That's it. We haven't seen beyond the premiere. We saw that.
Yes.
Dre asks, how was Tom and Emma in the first episode? Referring to Emma Darcy, who plays Rhaenyra Targaryen, and Tom Glenn Carney, who plays King Aegon Targaryen, the two monarchs currently battling or about to battle for the Iron Throne. I mean, you can't have two kings or two rulers in Seven Kingdoms. That's just nonsense. And okay, because that was some things I like. Dre, both Tom Glenn Carney and Emma Darcy are really, really good. Emma Darcy.
Yes.
Okay, we gotta be so careful, you guys, because we can't actually spoil anything. And if we trip over ourselves,
Nor would we want to.
I fully want to. But we might have to trip over ourselves a little bit trying to figure like what isn't a spoiler. I can say Emma Darcy is very good. The one I was really impressed with was Tom Glenn Carney. So we met these older generation of characters at the end of the last season. You know, the first season kind of rushed through time, these big time jumps. At the end, we met this adult versions of characters like King Aegon, of his brother Aemond, of King Aegon's wife Helena, of Rhaenyra's kids. Tom Glenn Carney as Aegon Targaryen, I'm calling it right now. At least, I'm not sure about the season yet, but MVP of the episode for me. He's on the throne. He's getting comfortable. He doesn't know how far he's allowed to act on his own without approval from his grandfather Otto or his mother Alicent, but he wants to kind of like expand. And Tom Glenn Carney had a lot of fun playing with that. You can read his frustration. You can read his eagerness. You can read his kind of bravado covering for confusion. You can kind of see the gear turning in his head. He was my favorite part of the episode. How about you, Daniel?
Yeah, I think Tom Glenn Carney is probably going to be one of the standout performances of the season. That's my gut feeling right now, having only seen the first episode, but also having read Fire and Blood. So like having a general idea of kind of what's ahead for Aegon as a character over, you know, we don't know for sure where the season will end compared to Fire and Blood, but we know some things that are happening, like Rook's Rest, which implies the fallout of Rook's Rest, which is very important for Aegon, will also happen. I really, really enjoyed his performance in the premiere. And that was kind of, I feel like you could see that even in the trailers and stuff.
Totally,
like,
you could.
Yeah. This doesn't even feel remotely spoilery to say, because every single bit of footage we've seen with Tom Glenn Carney, it's been like, oh, okay, he's going to be really good this season. Because like you said, we really didn't get to see him very much until near the end of season one, when he took over in episode 8. And here he is in this. We've got an image up on screen for you audio listeners. That is Otto Hightower, played by Rissa Fons, standing in front of the Iron Throne. And in the background behind him, kind of out of focus, you can see that Aegon is sitting the throne. Yeah, I really enjoyed both Tom and Emma D'Arcy in the premiere. But it's, I think Tom as Aegon brings an energy we haven't, that was kind of missing from House of the Dragon season one, honestly. And maybe some of the later seasons of Game of Thrones, which is having petty, mildly shitty people in power. I think that is a thing that Game of Thrones always did really well. That was so engaging. You know, like think of like the Joffrey Baratheons, the Ramsay Boltons. Like, he's not that level of awful at all. Like, and that's, again, not spoilers. That's Aegon as a character from Fire and Blood. He's not a sadist person like Joffrey or Ramsay, but he's a chaotic type of character that feels, if not cut from the same cloth, maybe cut from a bolt of cloth at the same store. So yeah, I think they were both excellent. And I think you guys are really going to enjoy them.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Another easy one from Dre. All you people, I see a few people in chat asking about specific moments. We're not going to talk about specific moments. Dan, you can correct me if I'm wrong and you want to incite the ire of HBO, but we're not going to be answering specifics here. So like, was X moment good? We really can't talk about that kind of stuff. But Dre wants to know, how would you rate the episode? How would you rate it, Dan?
Okay. I would probably give it a B minus. Okay. Why?
Ooh.
Here's a question from this. So Oppo asks, I have heard the episodes are slow. Do you guys feel the episode is slow? Okay. The honest truth to that is, yeah, it's a bit on the slow side, because the final episode of season one kind of promised war like that. Ooh, Julie, we'll get to your questions. You have great questions as usual. Again, we only seen the first one, not the first four. I did feel there was, I don't know, I expected a bit more energy and immediacy. A lot of the characters are kind of wanting to like go, but they can't quite do it yet for whatever reason. They're all kind of stuck in, kind of mires of their own making, other folks making. And the idea, and I'm not opposed to that. Slowness is fine. Like, being deliberate with your pacing is good. And there are a lot of moments in the prayer that really worked for me. I did want a bit more propulsion and maybe a bit fewer shots of people languishing in various states of liminal despair. But I did like it. And this doesn't mean it's bad. And overall, it's still very well made. It's beautifully photographed. It's beautifully acted. And there are things that really work. This is, again, I'm going to go back to Agen. Agen's my favorite bit. Agen, I think he kind of stands out because he seems to be having some fun. Like, he's not like having a ball or anything, but he's excited. He's excited in this new role, whereas a lot of the other people are sort of down in the dumps, which is important. But he's less interchangeable. Like, he's has just a different energy than everybody else.
Yeah.
Which was fun to watch. Like, he wants to go. He wants to do stuff, and he's being held back. Good question. Which side was more entertaining, Team Black or Team Green? Asked Dre. I would say, again, first episode, we haven't seen the whole thing, but Team Green, they're so messed up over there. We got Agen, who's a first-time king, but long-time watcher and full-time incompetent drunk, who's on the throne. That's fun. We have Aemon, who's sauntering around like an anime villain in his eye patch, thinking he's God's gift to strategy. We have Otto Hightower and Alicent, sort of still a little frazzled after the last one. There's more tension on that side of it. Mostly it's Agen. I just like when Agen's on screen. That's why I think Team Green is more entertaining for me. I'm going to go ahead and answer this spoiler. Sorry.
Yeah, he's an entertaining character. Like the way he's written is, as you know, some characters serve as more entertaining in a cast like this, where it's an ensemble cast. Like, I don't think anyone would ever call, you know, Rhaenyra like entertaining in the cracking jokes sort of way. Whereas like a character like Tyrion, that was always his shtick. I think Aegon's a little closer to that than a Rhaenyra or someone like that. But what were you were about to answer someone's question, Dan.
Really, really fast. There are two small spoiler questions we can answer. I don't think I'm gonna get penalized for this. Is Vhagar in the first two episodes? Asks Bushmaster. I'm going to go ahead and risk it. Yes, he is. Well, yes, she is. Sorry. And Bubo asks, did they change music in the intro? Because it's known, this isn't spoiling anything, that they changed the intro for this season. They got rid of that thing where all the blood goes down the various little stone channels.
King Viserys's model of old Valyria.
Valyria, yeah. To something new, to it's like a, and again, this isn't a spoiler, to like a Bayou tapestry being made.
Yeah. This is, you can find,
the music is the same.
They've talked about this publicly.
Yeah. So we're not spoiling anything. You can't get mad at us. The music is the same. Dre asks, will the episode show more sides of Agen? Absolutely it will. And hope they keep doing it. And Dan, here's a question that we can both talk about. Is it better than the first episode of season one? And I'm going to go ahead and say no. For the main reason being, and here's where I'm going to not talk about spoilers, but allude to something that we can all just, I think you know what I'm talking about. The series premiere ended with this horrific scene where King Viserys' wife, Emma, had a forced C-section. It was horrifying. It was awful. I hated it. And Nicole, congratulations. That is incredibly awesome. I got to put this comment up there. A nursery is dragon themed. Nicole's is. That's incredible.
Oh, congratulations, Nicole. That's amazing. Nicole.
Congrats and excellent taste. And congratulations. That's amazing. So the series premiere ended like that. The season two premiere also has a big moment at the end of it that is very dramatic and intense. And I don't think it landed as well as that first forced C-section moment. And God, that's all I'll say sentence. About that.
What a sentence to say out loud.
Right?
Yeah. I will say, I think it is an interesting thing. Yeah, fantasy fan. We're definitely fortunate that we've gotten to watch it. I think you guys are all going to really enjoy it. So like, I'll say that my prevailing impression and feeling for most of the episode was just, oh God, it's so nice to be back in Westeros. Like, I got chills. I immediately turned around and rewatched some of Game of Thrones, partially because Ramin Djawadi does some great work. And I think he's going to become one of the kind of, I don't want to say unsung heroes, because like everybody loves Ramin Djawadi, but like in terms of like connective tissue between House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones, I think Ramin Djawadi's scores and his choices about which bits of score to use do a lot of work. And I really enjoyed, that's an element I enjoyed of season one. It's an element I'm already enjoying in just one episode of season two. So, I think I never answered my rating. I would probably give it like a, it's so hard because it's like, I would say maybe either a B plus or an A minus for me. I think it's pretty comparable to the series premiere, but I do think the series premiere was a little bit better. And I think part of that is the nature of kind of where we are in the story and almost kind of the corner that House of the Dragon wrote itself into with the way it ended season one. So like the first season was all this buildup, right? And now it's like, it's time for war. It's time for the Dance of the Dragons. Here we are. But the way that some of these things go down in Fire and Blood, it's almost like they needed to drag some things out a little bit in order to fit the fact that this is a premiere. So like there are events that happen immediately after what we saw in the finale of season one in Fire and Blood that are kind of either glossed over or changed, or they just needed to navigate it slightly differently because it's not, here's a chapter of a book and George R. Martin's going to describe a few things. It's now, here's a season finale. Here's a season premiere. Those have different kind of pacing needs and things like that. The slower pace did not bother me. I will say, I think it's pretty in line with most Game of Thrones season premieres. Like if you go back and watch like the Thrones premieres, like they were never really like hardcore bangers with lots of action. Like often they were kind of picking up the pieces from the climactic events of the season before and then setting the stage for the new season. I think this one is very in line with that sort of tone. Richard Jones, I find it mad how being good and honorable in these shows gets you shafted, much like in real life. A controlled beast is the way forward. And I feel like George R. R. Martin, the themes of his books would agree with that cynicism. But yeah, so some of my thoughts there. Dan, what do you want to talk about next? Because I've been rambling for a minute. And there's a lot we can discuss, I think.
There are some great questions coming from the chat, by the way. You guys are being great. I'm going to answer some more questions.
Yeah.
I didn't mind the pace either. I watched the episode twice. It worked better for me the second time when I kind of got like situated into a bit slower of a pace and wasn't unexpecting it. The episode is good. There's lots of good stuff in it.
Yes,
that
it is.
That final stretch, it's not that it doesn't work. It didn't hit as hard as I wanted it to hit. What am I talking about? Who knows? What could possibly know? You'll all find out pretty soon anyway.
I agree with that, just for the record.
Priyanshu was right. Slow pacing usually works against the universe. There should be slow pace. We have a lot of characters to get to know. We have a lot of stories to set up. We have a lot of emotions to marinate in. And there were genuinely moving, innovative moments. There's some like cross-cutting stuff between Team Black and Team Green that I liked. Some of it is holdover from the last season. I'm going to go ahead and try and swing wide and talk about theme without spoiling anything. See if I succeed in this. And Nicole and your dragon baby. That's crazy. Oh, let's do some good questions though. Cause again, you guys have great questions. Priyanshu asks, will book fans be happy? It's the biggest question. That's quite a question, Priyanshu. And I am not sure how they're going to react to this. But I guess you can tell from my ambivalent tone that it probably won't be universal love from all quarters. Let's see.
I think, let me just chime in on that before we get to Bushmaster's question. I think book fans, the ones who are like hardcore, like attached to the specifics, are gonna one, really enjoy the episode, but also might have a harder time with some things than people who haven't read Fire and Blood. That is my prediction. I think there will be things that irk the book fans that most people think are fine in this episode.
Probably, yeah. A technical question. This one we can answer. Bushmaster, which is a...
Yes.
What does your name mean? I wonder. I'll think about it later. How are scenes in the dark? Are they better than episode seven, season one, having this infamous scene where Rhaenyra and Daemon are on the beach and you can't see a damn thing as they maneuver around the rushes? Yeah. They got a new director of photography. They got some new cameras. I don't know. I don't think you're going to have a problem with photography this year. It's bright. It's nice. They listened. It's fine. The show looks great. I mean, Game of Thrones shows always
look great. Look great.
They always look deep and dark and kind of lots of shadows and light and interesting images. The show looks wonderful. Don't worry about that. Okay. So we can't talk about the changes in this new season, but we can talk about changes in the old season and maybe hint that there's some continuity in the way that they change things in the old season that's carrying over to this season. Mm. Now, Daniel and I and our boss, Natalie, were talking about this specifics, which we won't give you, but that in the first season, there was this habit, right, of taking the characters and having them do things in a way that sort of shielded them from having to take full responsibility for their actions. A good, for instance, is Aemon Targaryen kills Lucerys Velaryon, right? That's a murder that kind of sets off a lot of things. But in the show makes sure to let us know, oh, it was Vhagar the Dragon who went a little bit rogue. So Aemon's culpability is like a little nebulous. Another example, Alicent Hightower is pushing for her son, King Aegon, to be the next king, to set the Iron Throne against Rhaenyra. But they included this little thing where she's doing this in part because she misinterpreted the dying words of her husband, her milk with a poppy addled, I've carved out crypt keeper husband, who sort of said the word egg and shook to mean like, oh, guess the egg is going to be in the throne. I heard an interview from Brian Cogman earlier that said that, and he was talking about that moment, and he says, you could interpret this as Alicent just hearing what she wanted to hear. And that she would have done this anyway, which I like. I like that. Maybe the show is being almost too subtle because it seems to me that it's kind of giving her an out for behaving badly. Like Rhaenyra is the heir, but because Alicent got this command from her dying husband, she gets to push for someone who's not ready to be in the throne without feeling bad about it. And part of me is like, I wish she would just push for it because she wants it. There's a little continuation of that kind of theme here. I didn't think it was that bad, actually. It might involve a character who has long flaxen silver white hair and who kills wives and seduces nieces. I didn't think it was that bad. I didn't think it was a problem. I actually kind of liked the way it scrambled things but didn't remove responsibility. And we can cut up specifics. I can't talk about them to you in this, Dan. I can't talk about them to you, even though I'd like to explain myself more thoroughly to you, but I can't.
Which you can on Sunday during our after show.
Oh, yes, because we're going to have our stream on Sunday night right after the show is over at 9 p.m. CST, 10 p.m. EST. And
yes.
Why not? 8 in the mountains. And 7 on the West Coast. Yes. But that's what I'll say. And I think we got some comments here that kind of reflect what I'm saying, that I swear to God, I'm talking about. Writers are scared to make characters do bad and evil things. I think
that is very on point. And we can... So again, we haven't even seen, you know, a lot of the season, but that is my impression. This was an issue in season one. My impression is I'm expecting it to continue to be one in season two. And Bubo says, I would say that like the characterization is even better in the TV show. In the books, they were too flat. They only wanted power and blood.
Yeah.
And I think you know, the book is written, that's this book, Fire and Blood, is written very ambiguously. It is a fake history where a maester is interpreting the historical accounts of several potentially unreliable sources, each tainted with their own biases. So I think the show had to flesh out a lot of these characters. I think in some places it has done really well. Like, as much as everyone hates Kristen Cole, I also hate Kristen Cole. I think the choice to show Rhaenyra seduce Kristen Cole in season one was a really good decision. That's something that's ambiguous in the book. You don't know why Kristen Cole hates Rhaenyra. You just know that he was her staunchest ally. And then somehow overnight, he decided she was his worst enemy and she hated, or she was his worst enemy. He hated her. And Martin kind of gives you a few options for why that could be the case. I do think that there is a tendency in the show to shy away from letting characters just make awful decisions or like be awful. And I think that's something that like Martin's books, like he's really, really good at that. At like, you know, as awful as you think people can be, they will often surprise you and show you that they can be worse. There's like a real like theme of that type of cynicism, and not just in A Song of Ice and Fire, in all of his work. Martin seems some shit, I guess. So I do think that the show kind of struggles with that. And I think I am hopeful that they start to overcome it. The Allison example is a really good one, because in the penultimate episode, like you said, she makes this case for Aegon should sit the throne because she misinterpreted Viserys' words. It is a straight power grab in the novel, and it is portrayed that way. And it's kind of like, I want these characters to have the extra dimensions, but also like, don't be afraid to let them have a blatant power grab. Like, I think those things can make them more interesting. So
you can have,
yeah,
both.
Yeah, you should have both. And Thrones had both, and it worked really well.
Yeah.
So I hope that House of the Dragon is able to eventually. At this point, you know, again, without getting into specifics, that's something in particular I'm nervous about, having seen the premiere.
I also want, okay, I won't take long at this, but I love arguing about this point, about the ambiguity.
Other
questions.
Let's here. Talk. Are we going to talk about Laenor Velaryon? You can be honest.
Yes.
He's the gold standard for why this argument doesn't hold up.
Oppo, they're showing the real version of events as they interpret them. And as Jonathan Petra says, too, great. Doesn't care about changes. Awesome. Really, really fast. I'm not a fan of when folks say that, like, well, the book's written ambiguously, so it's okay to be ambiguous. Because a lot of the changes I didn't like very much in the first season were not any of the selections that Martin gave us in the book. They were just completely new things. Like,
yes,
nowhere in the book does anybody suggest that Kristen Cole killed Joffrey Lanmuth at a wedding in front of witnesses, not at a tournament when there's a built-in justification for fighting somebody, which changes the calculus of what that all means. Like, that wasn't an option in the book. So it's not looking at something ambiguous, then changing it, and then choosing and then filling in the blanks. It's just changing it, which I don't think they need to do so much. And by the way, this is mostly a problem for the first season. I don't think they've really done this in the second season so far.
Agree with that.
Okay. Can we talk about anything else about that? Sorry, go on.
I mean, you've seen the promo shots. Kristen Cole still looks like Kristen Cole. So
bitterness is great for your skin.
I guess so. Yes, bitterness is great for your skin. I think with the, you know, I will say, like, for the loving the source material, not minding changes, I don't mind changes either, so long as it doesn't make for a less effective scene.
Yeah.
And I can understand it in some instances, like the Joffrey Lanmuth one, that's one where you're completely right. Like Dan, like straight up, you are right. They changed it in a way that made it unjustifiable. Whereas in the book, it's there are so many examples of people dying on accident. That's in air quotes for the audio listeners, on mm-hmm. accident in tourneys, because people take out their frustrations in tourneys and use it as an excuse to commit a murder in public. That's very different than Kristen Cole beating a dude to death at a wedding. However, from a production standpoint, I can understand why they might have had to change things, because doing a tourney is a much larger production element than simply combining that scene into a wedding they were already going to do anyway. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I can at least understand how they might have made the decisions. I think I draw bigger issues where it is things that, you know, the Fire and Blood is very ambiguous, but there are times where that veil of ambiguity slips away and Martin stops describing some things as, this is what Mushroom said, this is what Grandmaster Munkin said, and this is our best guess at what that all means. There are times where that slips away and he just describes a scene straight. It happens once in a while. Laenor sure. Velaryon is kind of one of those examples where, like, Laenor Velaryon is murdered very, very publicly in the book. And then the ambiguity comes from, why was he murdered? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, people speculate on, was it Daemon? Was it this person? Was it this person? But the fact that he was murdered very publicly is a matter of public record because it happened in the middle of a marketplace. So there are things like that where I think decisions about changes are being made, and I don't quite understand the reasoning for it. And this is just generally speaking. I'm not really speaking, you know, entirely about the season two premiere. This is like bird's eye view of the show and why I draw issue with some changes. And others I could care less, and I think they're great. I do think the show has a lot of opportunity to fill in those blanks. Bushmaster said, the good changes, in my opinion, are character changes, but their actions are not. You already pulled that comment up on the screen. I kind of agree with that, I think.
Cool.
Yeah. Chu just joined and said, did we like the episode? Yes, with a few reservations, I think, is kind of the general consensus.
I liked it. I'll say right now, though, I didn't like as much as the premiere. I was disappointed in some aspects. It's lovely. It's beautifully made. It's a good episode of TV. It's dramatic. I like the characters, I like the performances. I like a lot about it. Overall, I did think it was a bit of a letdown, the season two premiere of House of the Dragon. Laura, we will post the full thing here after this is over, so you can watch it if you like on the Winter is Coming YouTube channel, or listen to us in podcast form. Wherever podcasts are available, nice. iTunes, Google Play, or wherever. Stick around, Laura. Although we are probably about done with House of the Dragon. Anything else you want to say, Daniel, about the season two premiere, which we will review in all of its spoilery glory on Sunday at 9 p.m. CST?
Right after the episode ends, we'll be doing another stream. We're going to be doing that all throughout the run of House of the Dragon season two. Uh-huh. So join us. I guess a couple of things I will say. So I had a couple of reservations about the premiere. I generally really loved it. And my prevailing feeling was, God, it's great to be back. Y'all are going to really enjoy it if you've been missing Westeros. I have seen a few reviews say something similar to this, that they were a little confused by some things in the first episode or two. They kind of had some hesitations. And then by the time episode 3 and 4 hit, the show really hit its stride again. So I do think this might end up being one of those instances similar to the Wheel of Time season 2, where the first few episodes came out and I was scratching my head a lot about some things.
I like
And them. Then you did like them. I really didn't. you know, like Uno getting offed in that episode 3, I was like, oh damn, they just went there with Uno. That dude had a whole ass arc in the books that we're just not going to see now. So I do wonder if I'll have similar feelings with House of the Dragon season 2, where there were some things I had reservations about. And once we hit episode 3 and 4, we'll have a clearer view of things. But time will tell.
Great.
I do think.
Don't you love it when you're like, it'll get good. Just keep.
Well, no. I don't want to say like it is good. I don't want to make it sound like it'll get good. It is good. There are some really excellent performances in the premiere.
There are.
People have asked about the sets a few times. The sets are incredible.
They really are very impressive
on a level that few television productions do. And I think the sets are almost their own like star of the show in a certain way, because they really are astonishing, especially King's Landing. I think the King's Landing, the Red Keep is ridiculous.
Dude, I want to live in the Red Keep. And it looks like
you could.
I could.
You literally could.
Based on that set. Okay. Yeah. I think we should move on. Woo! Although, guys, you have been really good with questions, so keep them coming and we will answer them. Keep in mind that we can't say any spoilers. Like I know that Laura asked, is May Laura in the show? I can't tell you until Sunday.
I'm tempted.
But this is a good comment.
Yeah, I'm tempted to answer that, but we should leave.
No, that's too explicit.
We have the answer to that from season one, but that's fair.
No, we don't. I mean, if people still think that Darren Targaryen's in the show, there's no reason they could think that Maelor is in the show.
Darren Targaryen is in the show, Dan. Give him time. He's off screen.
Yeah.
This is not a spoiler. Darren Targaryen's not in the premiere, but I bet he's going to show up.
You got stuff out. They're going to get us. Laura says there are bound to be some changes. It's a history book adaptation. So after all, Rhaenyra and Alicent disappeared during the war a lot. That's why you had reservations. I would say that's not why we had reservations. I'm not sure we can really say much more. I feel like we've said enough. I liked it.
Yeah.
I didn't love it. And we'll see what the folks say when season 2 gets here. Sweeta, I can't answer
We can't answer that.
We can't answer how was Blood and Cheese, or even if Blood and Cheese is in the episode, we can't do it, or HBO will kill us and our families. So, but if you have non-spoilery questions, we can answer them. And feel free to keep asking them, but I think we're going to move on to another section, right?
Yeah, wait. Just before we do, I just want to say to Laura's comment about if there were bound to be some changes, Rhaenyra and Alicent disappear in the book during the war a lot. I will say none of my reservations have to do with material they added because the characters weren't around.
Yeah, exactly. And it's true. Episode of 10, love ratings. I'd give it a solid 7.
7's what I was going to say too. Yeah.
Isn't 7. It weird
5 for optimism.
Isn't it fun how if you do a letter grade, it's like higher, but when it's on but even though that would be a C, which is lower than we gave it as a letter grade, it feels right. Julie will calm her expectations. Probably a good idea. But it's good. It's going to be fun. You want to watch it.
Ertek wants to know,
break the internet.
Hello, do you guys think the internet will break after the first episode or not?
If it does break the internet, I don't think it'll be in the way people are expecting.
I think this is my prediction. I think episode 4 is going to break the internet a lot more than this one, than the premiere.
Which, personally. By the way, we have not seen. So this is
we have not Roman, seen.
Passing this conscience into the future.
Yes. Yes. We generally expect episode 4 will be Rook's Rest. If you've read the book, you know stuff goes down at Rook's Rest.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know that Dre has asked us like several times, how was Fina Saban the episode? She's excellent. Okay.
She is.
Keep them coming.
I love the last
but
Kingdom
we're going to move on.
Love.
I do like that too. Keep them coming. We're going to move on to just a quick what are we watching and reading section beyond House of the Dragon.
Yeah, yeah. Other
things.
What?
I like House of the Dragon. Things? Yeah, of course there are other things. You Philistine. Of course there are. Sorry, I'm kidding.
Fair.
I will say, I like House of the Dragon. My current favorite show right now is Interview with the Vampire on AMC. This thing is sexy. Expect. This thing is exciting. This thing is kind of gothic chic. This thing is... They really have a way of giving us characters and performances that seem so close to camp, that are so bubbling with drama and pain and melodrama, but never quite go over. These like lost, lonely souls. on an eternal journey through the dark side of night that I'm really enjoying. Interview with the Vampire, guys. If you haven't watched an AMC, please watch it. It's so good.
Yeah, I really need to watch it. Honestly, the whole reason I haven't is just because I don't have AMC Plus, and there are just so many streaming services. And I missed the window when it was on like Max or whatever, because there was a brief window of time where it was on a different streaming service. So everybody that I know who has seen it is obsessed with it, says it's one of the best things, says if you're not watching it, you're depriving yourself of really excellent television. Natalie in the chat says Interview with the Vampire is the best thing I've seen since House of the Dragon season one, and it is so frustrating how underrated it is. That seems to be the general consensus. Yeah, underwatch.
It's really good. It's really rich and just like dripping in this sort of unapologetically melodramatic mood that I just really dig.
Yeah.
As JBR asks, what are your thoughts on Shogun? We love the crap out of it. Oh, we watched that Shogun back and it was airing a couple of months ago. Incredible. Great show.
Yeah. If you want deep dives, if you want deep dives of our thoughts on Shogun, go back in the Take the Black archives on YouTube, because we did a few episodes talking about that. Yeah. So we did really both enjoy Shogun quite a lot. So the thing I'm watching that is not, I'm just going to assume is not as good as Interview with the Vampire, is The Acolytes, which is the new Star Wars show on Disney Plus. They just dropped their third episode yesterday. And I really enjoyed the third episode. I am not surprised to see a lot of Star Wars toxic haters really, really loathing episode three. Have you seen it yet, Dan?
Yeah, I watched it over my lunch. And it's fine. Yeah. It's kind of that says Acolyte is garbage. Pardon my French. I don't think it's quite garbage. I do think it's kind of on the dull side. I hate / love making fun of kids, but am I the only one who thought the little girl playing the twins? Oh, come on. I can't be the only one who thinks this. That little girl who played young May and Osha in this long flashback.
It's sure two different girls, Dan. They're two different
twins?
Kids.
Well, they both suck.
I don't know sure if they're twins. I just know they're not wonderful the same young child. Ladies
with a great future ahead of them, but they weren't very good at acting in convincing me that they were these characters. I think the show is fine. I'm not going to get up in arms about it, but I'm not terribly excited by it.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair way to put it. I think they're doing some interesting things. I think it feels to me like a show that is obviously aimed at younger audiences, which is fine. But I do think that's it feels that way a little bit more. It feels almost like, I'm hesitant to say like Star Wars cosplay. There's something about it that almost feels like a little less like it feels more Disney-fied, I guess, than a lot of the Star Wars series have. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a tone they chose and they're leaning into it, which I think is what makes it not as bad, right? Because it's not pretending to be something else. It's just, this is the show it is. I liked some of the lore stuff they did because the third episode, we can spoil this a little bit because it's out, but it's entirely out. A flashback. So it is one that was, I liked that. I thought that was cool. I like that they showed this stuff right up front. I do think it wasn't great for the pacing of the season overall.
Yeah. Three episodes in, you're going to do a whole flashback. You think you've earned that right? Do you? I'm not so sure.
Exactly. The thing I was most concerned about really was, so Dean Charles Chapman plays Torben in this show, and we saw him in the second episode. That's Tommen from Game of Thrones, for anyone who's not watching.
Yeah, it is.
In the second episode, he's got like a bald cap and a crazy receding hairline. He looks awful. And the thing I wanted to know was, is Tommen all right? was that his real hair, and how have the years been treating him? Because that dude's only 27. So in the flashback, we do see him younger. He does look more like Tommen Baratheon.
Explain that. Yeah.
Yeah, the saga of which is Tommen's real hair, is it even in this show, is the thing I am most invested in The Acolyte at the moment. So yeah, it's just okay is kind of how I would put it. But I know that a lot of people really love it. So the people who are enjoying it, I'm happy for you. The people who are hating it, I'm not surprised. And I'm in the ambivalent middle.
Yeah, about me too. Laura says, other than House of the Dragon, she's enjoying Fallout, which was excellent. And The Boys, which airs tomorrow. I've seen the first episode of that one too. The Boys season 4, I watched the first episode ahead of time. Yeah, I mean, The Boys is like so rock solid consistent. It's made by like these TV veterans who just know how to put out good things. That maybe it has some problems hitting like the incredible highs of a Game of Thrones or a House of the Dragon, but The Boys always entertains me, and the new season, I've seen a bit of it, is on the same level. It's good. I like it. It's entertaining. Yes, I did, Sid. I liked episode 1 of The Boys. It was a fun time. It's got like the giant gross out moments and the comedy and the character drama, and the actors are good. Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I was watching Homeland, an oldie. Excellent. Anything else I gotta watch? Oh, someone said they missed Lestat from Interview with the Vampire. Well, why don't you wait to this Sunday and see what happens? That person who said that.
Ooh, okay.
And you just wait. You just wait. What's gonna happen? Robert's behind in shows. Think, there's a lot out there to watch.
Yeah, your point about the seasoned TV people making these shows. I feel like that's a really fair point because like people like Ryan Condal and Jonathan Nolan and the showrunners of Fallout, one of whom worked on Silicon Valley. And I forget what the other one was. Oh, Eric Kripke of The Boys. Like they're too good at making television to make real stinkers, I think. Like they just get the medium in a way that I think their shows are good. I know Westworld, a lot of people didn't like the last few seasons, but...
Well, I mean, there can be an advantage to being a David Benioff or Dan Weiss who comes in, you don't really know what rules you can't break, so you just break them and end up being like this giant phenomenon.
Absolutely. With the one caveat that their original pilot was so bad that HBO made them reshoot the whole thing with a seasoned TV veteran. I forget who it was because I don't have the book handy with that information, but to help them learn the things that they could maybe break the rules, but the other ones that were there for a reason. So,
but they listened and they learned and they grew into tastemakers. I want to answer this before we move on to our last section. Bushmaster asked, you guys think they should stop making Dune movies after Children of Dune? God Emperor's too complicated for a movie. If you know the books, I do know the books, Bushmaster. And I don't think they have plans to make Children of Dune yet. They should, because that would be a good movie. God Emperor of Dune, I have read it. I did a book on Cape, don't tell anybody. It is indeed dense and weird, and I can't picture how it would be a movie. Probably they'll stop at Children of Dune. I hope they just do Children of Dune. That's what I'm hoping for. All right.
Yeah.
We had a lot of people in here today. Sure, go ahead.
No. Well, there's one more thing I've been getting into that I want to let people know about before we do the lightning round. But I do want to hear what you were going to say. Should I go first?
I was going to say, let's do the lightning round. So go ahead.
Okay. So aside from all the shows and stuff that have been out, I've been reading a series that has been really, really damn good. And it is Between Earth and Sky by Rebecca Roanhorse. So Black Sun was the first of these books. I think AMC has optioned it with Angela Kang from The Walking Dead. So they're considering making a show out of it. But these are like Mesoamerican inspired fantasy. Like drawing on like the sort of cultural touchstones of like the Aztecs and the Maya, but like a fantasy world. So like the same way Game of Thrones has like knights and castles. This has like different clans and animals and you know, trade items that were relevant in Mesoamerica. This series, I really can't talk it up enough. There is one pull quote I don't know where it is. I don't know which of these it is on, because I have the second and third books here. This is Fevered Star, the second one. First one is Black Sun. Third one is Mirrored Heavens, which just came out. I read Fevered Star in about a day and a half last week because it was just that good. So there's a quote on this from Stephen Graham Jones that is, stands shoulder to shoulder with the very best fantasy out there. There's Martin, there's Jemisin, and now there's Roanhorse. That quote keeps sticking in my head because there is something about her writing that reminds me of A Song of Ice and Fire a little bit, like just the depth of the world building and the characters. We were just talking about this for a different book series and a different video that will be coming to the channel sometime soon. But I know you like a good character, Dan, and the characters in these, they feel like real people. Some of them are real messy. Most of them are real messy, but they are just like real people with needs and wants and dreams and lots of issues. That series is so, so good. So I needed to shout it out because I'm enjoying that more than most anything else I'm consuming right now in terms of media. I'm finding myself like sneaking off when television's on to like go read more of Rebecca Roanhorse. So if you need new books, people, that is definitely a trilogy to check out, and it's finished as of last week.
That's really cool. Love it. Maybe I will. I just got in the mail A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, so I'm going to read that finally.
Oh, nice. Dunkin' Egg.
And all you guys have just great questions today, talking about Severance coming, season two of Silo coming. I think it's brand new. We'll get that on this after this. If you're new here, because I see a lot of new people around in the chat, be sure to tune into us on Sunday night to talk about Spoiler Happy with House of the Dragon. Yes. Check us out on
right after it ends.
The Winter is Coming YouTube channel, Facebook page, and download us in podcast form wherever podcasts are available. And also enjoy this final section we do every week, which is the WIC News Lightning Round, where we go through a bunch of stories we couldn't get through in the main body of the show and give our 20-second opinions on them. No more, no less. And I'll be keeping time, so our producer Richard is out. And before we start, I'll answer the one last question from Laura, who asks, are they filming Dunkin' Egg? I believe yes, or they're just about to start, or they're really, really close. I know they're pretty much there.
It was slated to start this month. I just don't know the exact day. So they're, you know what, Laura, since you asked today, they probably just started filming today, and you're in tune with the universe.
Blurb. All right, Dan. As usual, I didn't put these in any kind of order. So
let me ask you this first. Go ahead. So I can talk about the second one.
Okay. Ask it in three.
Right?
Does that work? No, I'll put it up. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. The Last of Us Season 2 will only have 7 episodes, but we might get 4 seasons.
Yes, we might. That's fine. I mean, I wish shows just had longer times, but it's a prestige show. I'm sure every episode will be good. 4 seasons seems like a long time, but the first season was really good. I have belief in it. Yeah, use lightning round, baby. Analog version.
That was nice.
Cell phone, but whatever. Daniel. Suzanne Collins is releasing a new Hunger Games novel in 2025, and there's already a movie adaptation in the works. Your opinion, 20 seconds on the clock, go.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Suzanne Collins, she just kind of comes out of the mist and every once in a while, and it's like, here, I wrote a new Hunger Games book. They're never bad. So I think it feels like just franchise stuff going on, but also I'm confident that she's writing this because she feels a need to. And so this is Sunrise on the Reaping. That's about Haymitch winning the Hunger Games. Okay. All right. Oh, here's a fun, lighter one. So Sean Bean, that's Eddard Stark, for those keeping track in the back. Boromir. The villain of GoldenEye, whose name I don't remember. Legendary actor Sean Bean. He was kicked out of a bar in Liverpool for vaping and refusing to stop.
It's just funny. They kicked Ned Stark out of a bar for refusing to stop vaping. The guy said it's fine. I wonder if it would have been fine had he not been a famous actor. And in GoldenEye, he played a villain named Alex Trevelyan, which I remember because I liked that movie. And I played the game a lot.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, Sean Bean, you'll be fine no matter what happens.
That's a great... Yeah, Sean Bean, you'll be fine.
All right.
I think like four seasons of The Last of Us is going to be fine. It'll be okay, people.
We'll see. Daniel, Paul Giamatti will play the main villain in Star Trek Starfleet Academy. Give us your best Paul Giamatti impression. Go.
I do not have a Paul Giamatti impression on retainer. Paul Giamatti, you know him, you love him. If you've seen him in stuff, you know who he is. You don't need me to explain it. He is playing the new villain in the Star Trek Starfleet Academy show, which is about exactly what it sounds like, the school where Starfleet is trained. Always love to see him in stuff. So sure, I can get behind that.
Nice.
Okay. Ooh. Okay. So Godzilla Minus One. Did you watch it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good. Me too. Godzilla Minus One is now on Netflix. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's great. It was the most streamed movie or television show for the first week of June.
Everyone loves a story like this, right? Where they make this Godzilla movie for $50 million, which is comparatively nothing for a big Hollywood movie. And it ends up being a hit, and now it's very popular. Great. It's a really fun, tight, emotional action movie. I watched it over the weekend. I really liked it. I'm happy for all of its success. And I hope it shows Hollywood you don't have to spend a kajillion dollars to make an action movie, okay? Leonardo DiCaprio doesn't need to make $40 million, all right? You can pay him like $1 million. It'll be fine.
No, he doesn't.
Sean Bean vaping in the bar. Okay. Daniel. Get rid of this. Oh, whatever. The showrunners of the Fallout show, which some people mentioned in the chat, are trying to get the second season out as fast as humanly possible.
So the Fallout showrunners gave an interview. They talked about how they've relocated the production to the West Coast, which is really good for them because they film in a lot of deserts. Trying to make New York City and New York look like deserts in February, it was hard for them production-wise. They are currently in a writer's room writing season 2, and they expect it to go faster than the first season. All right. Oh,
ask me either of them.
News that is laden with finality. The Boys is official. The Boys is going to end with season 5.
Tis. Yeah, good call. Some folks were talking it's going to end with season 5. Somebody mentioned, I think it was Laura, that the Supernatural went on a little long. The guy who made it, Eric Kripke, who made both of those, going to end The Boys earlier. Good idea. I mean, they're not really in it because they have like Gen V and they probably have something else in the cooking. I'm going to bet because they want us to go for a long time. But the show ended originally. That's a good thing.
I agree. Hard agree with that.
Now he's a baked bean. All right. And finally, Daniel, talking about Interview with the Vampire. AMC... is making a new, you know what? You asked me that.
I got you.
Daniel, give us your 20-second opinion about this TV show Arcane on Netflix. What do you want to talk about with Arcane?
I couldn't add it to the list fast enough. Yeah. So Arcane season 2 got its first trailer this week. It looks awesome. That's based on League of Legends. It's an animated series on Netflix, but it's also just a really excellent show. Season 2 is going to be the end of Arcane. It's the end of Vi and Jinx's story, but they're also looking into making more shows set in that universe because there are like 170 characters in League of Legends, so why wouldn't they? All right.
Last one.
Now, last one, I can ask you this thing that you obviously know more about. And yes, Laura, Ella Purnell content, because Lucy from Fallout is also Jinx in Arcane. Hell yeah. All right. Yeah. Dan, for you, the final lightning round question of today's show. AMC, the studio behind Interview with a Vampire, they're making a new Immortal Universe show, which is their Anne Rice universe of shows, about the Talamasca. What the hell is that?
The Talamasca is like in the Anne Rice universe, basically like the organization that like the governor that oversees all the spooky things, vampires and werewolves and crap, and ghosts and witches. I don't know if this is like the third season of Interview with a Vampire or if it's just a whole new show. They want us to keep going. I've loved interviews so much that I'm willing to go with it. I hope it's not just more shows for more shows' sake. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And folks, that is our show. Love seeing you guys here. Love having all the new people. Remember, we are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. Talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, books, movies, TV, including House of the Dragon. We're also, for the next 8 weeks, going to do Sunday night shows at 8 p.m. CST. You something funny, Daniel?
Sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. I just saw Julie's comment in the chat about Sean Bean.
Baked bean.
Vaping in the bar. Now he's a baked bean. It's sorry. Awesome. I'm mature, I promise. You were saying something about how our show happens every Wednesday and Sunday for the next 2 months.
Yes. Sundays at 8 CST, Wednesdays at 2 CST. Join us. We love chatting with people, to chat with each other. We'll chat about stuff. Sometimes we guess, sometimes we don't. I have a dog in the background for our people who are viewing on the Facebook channel, the YouTube page, where you can find us. Winter is coming. Facebook, YouTube. Download our podcast to listen at the gym or in the car or doing dishes. I don't know your life. And we'd love to talk more with you. So thanks so much. And see you soon. Bye, everybody.
Catch you Sunday, y'all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.